Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Today, we are joined by Claudia D. Thompson, a leadership consultant, a team strategist, and the founder of The Business Fabric, which is a no-nonsense leadership academy for entrepreneurs who have never planned to be bosses. With 20 years of cross-industry experience and a grounded, which I love, human-first approach, Claudia helps business owners lead with confidence and build their teams to help them show up. Her brand new book, Take Charge, is a bold call for leaders and business owners who are ready to stop winging it and start leading with purpose. Guys, get ready for a powerful conversation. I can already feel it on clarity, connection, and what building a team culture looks like. Claudia, good morning, good afternoon, since you're in the UK. How are you today?
Hello, and thank you so much for having me, and what an intro. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm very good. The summer or spring has finally arrived even in the UK, so that's very, very good.
Yeah, the UK is known as like a Seattle, right, where it's never really warm.
It's never, well, now it's gone to the other extreme where it hasn't rained for so long that all the farmers and everyone's like, can we just a little bit of rain to save some harvest?
Sending rain your way, for sure. Okay. I understand. Cool. So every powerful book starts with a defining moment or a defining thought. What was your spark and what made you name the book Take Charge?
Okay. So the defining moment was, I had just left a job where I felt that I could really make a difference. And I felt like I would be, well, without trying to sound too arrogant or too full of myself, where I know I could have made a difference and I could have helped the business. But the boss that I was working for was very, no, we always do it like this and we have done it like this for 20 years. And who are you to come in with your new ideas and so on? And then I realized, now I don't think that's the right environment for me. And then I found myself at this, this crossroads where you're trying to decide what to do next. And I thought, well, maybe I'm just not meant to work for someone else. And and that was when I, like, at that junction, I spoke to a lot of friends and family, and a lot of them were unhappy in their roles. And they said, oh, my boss just does this, and my boss does this, and my boss never lets me do that, and so on. And I thought, okay, maybe there is some communication that needs to happen between the two parties. So that was the original idea behind the book. And then I started writing it, and originally it was a bit of a me just getting off my chest everything that's wrong with the horrible bosses out there. But interestingly, as I was writing it, I realized it's not just a case of you're a good boss or you're a bad boss. It's much more nuanced than that. And I realized I don't think anyone goes out there and decides, today I'm going to be a really horrible boss. It was quite therapeutic in a way, just writing the book and working through a framework and helping or trying to understand both sides of the fence and bringing them together in like one 4-step framework. And in terms of the title, to answer your second question, is origin. So I was playing around with a lot of titles, and at one point the title was In Charge. And then I thought, well, but there's something not quite right. And then actually a friend of mine said, well, how about take charge? And that really stuck with me, because I was like, yes, because being in charge, that's a job title. That's just something that comes with, you're the boss. That means you're in charge. But it's not, you're not just, people don't just look up to you or treat you as a leader or see you as this inspirational, motivational leader just because you're in charge. You actively have to take charge and know what you want and, yeah, just take charge of the direction of the business, of your mindset, and so on. So that's how the title came to be.
I absolutely love that. And so quick segue off of that, but why do you think leaders don't take charge? What is the underlying emotion or behavior?
Oh, that's a good question. I think very, very underlying is the whole, what do others think of me? So I think a lot of leaders, they want to be liked. And I mean, let's face it, nobody wants to be disliked. And if you go into your team meeting and you declare, you know, guys, we're now going to do something completely different, you risk some people not taking that very well. Sure. And why would you do that on purpose? Why would you want to make others dislike you? So I think really deep down, it's about wanting to be liked, wanting to be a good boss, wanting to be a friendly boss, and so on. But the story or the message that I hopefully bring across in the book is you don't have to be a mean boss to be a good boss.
Yes, definitely the vulnerability is, if I take charge and they don't follow me, what does that mean about me, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. What is one surprise, not to let the cat out of the bag, but what is one surprise that leaders will find when they read your book?
Oh, I guess it's because when I started looking into the whole leadership topic and the whole what kind of content is out there already, I felt a lot of it was quite, well, almost condescending and a bit patronizing, and also telling people, you have to be more this and do more that and say more this and, you know, be selfish, be mean and all of that. But I think, and that might be the biggest surprise, is I don't think anyone needs fixing. I don't think bosses are broken or there's anything wrong with them. I think with just a solid strategy or a strategy, full stop, they will already feel so much more confident in their role as a leader.
Yeah. Wow. The fact that you said that most of the leadership books or content out there is condescending, it's surprising for me, but I see where you're coming from for sure. I think, you know, a lot of the stuff out there is older, and it does feel like everybody just wants to fix people, self-help, right? Yeah. Instead of encouraging and guiding. I love that. Awesome.
And it's also, so just to clarify, it also is, it feels a lot of it is targeted at big corporate businesses.
Yes.
But the leaders that I like to work with and the leaders that make up, well, here in the UK, it's over 60% of the economy. And I think in the US, it's similar numbers, is actually small business owners. Mm-hmm. So the ones that don't have millions and millions to spend mm-hmm. on things like staff training and leadership training and so on. And I think a lot of the content of the big, possibly outdated books and leaders out there is very targeted at just throw more money at the problem.
Right.
And I don't think that works for small business owners that are in the trenches every day and firefighting, having to wear different hats all the time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, being part of a corporation myself, I do find that our trainings, they lack the essence of like implementation, right? Actual execution. They're all very high level. They all sound good. You leave feeling good, but I call it mental masturbation because that's all it is. You go back to your cubby and you're like, well, that was great. And you kind of fold your hands and just wait for the next one because you don't know how to actually do the thing that we just learned. You know, we learn, it's almost like textbook, you know, going to college, you learn textbook, but the real world is very, very, very different. So that's thank you for pointing that out. I know that you work with that.
I will remember this expression of mental masculinity.
Go ahead.
Thank you for saying that, because a lot of my of the book are actually exercises. Mm-hmm. So real, you know, take 5 minutes and do this. At your team, look at the staff that you have. And it's a bit of a, because I always like the idea of having an audio book as well. I like the idea of recording my own audio book and then being available on Audible. But now I've come to realize it's so action focused and so exercise driven, and there's tools and so on. I don't think it would make a great audiobook, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I hear that. And the exercises are absolutely necessary, because you have to feel it within you to be able to actually do it. You have to know that it lives within you. I really appreciate the fact that you guys have action steps in there. You said you work with a lot of small and medium-sized businesses, people who probably never thought of themselves as being a leader or being a boss. So what is the biggest leadership lesson or myth? I should start with the myth, and then we'll go to the lesson that they have been sold, and how do you help them kind of unlearn that?
Okay. The biggest myth. Well, it's probably that you are either a leader or you're not. So it is this whole like, well, you either are inspirational and people look up to you, or you don't. And then that kind of gives you that, if you're a business owner and you feel like, well, I'm not naturally inspiring, I'm not naturally, you know, even at school, I wasn't the kid that all the other kids wanted to play with. And then that kind of almost builds a shield or a wall around you, and you fall into this trap of thinking, well, maybe it's just not for me. Maybe I don't make a great leader. Maybe I can't be a great boss. So that's probably the biggest myth, that there is a certain type that you have to be to be successful.
And so how do you teach those business owners to be inspirational?
Well, being inspirational is all about like reigniting your own energy and finding your own mojo again, because so many times, and especially small business owners, we start a business because we have a great idea, or we have a product that we feel the market needs, or we just see a gap in the market of a service that's not there. And so we start, and then that goes really well. And then we start hiring people. And then suddenly we have all these people around us. And then also, suddenly you find yourself where you do less of the things that you are really good at, and also the things that made you start the business in the first place. So all those businesses all these things that you were passionate about. So slowly over time, your own motivation just kind of dwindles away. So the first chapter in the book is actually all about yourself and your own mojo and refinding that spark, because only when you know why you do what you do you even stand a chance to encourage others to be excited about that project that you're working on as well. So in my opinion, it starts with lighting yourself up and re-energizing yourself, because then you have that light that the others can take a bit off as well.
Right. Yeah. And for small business owners, you know, like you said, you start the business, you're ignited, you love what you do, you hire people, you start to do less, thinking that you're supposed to do less of what you love, when in fact, you probably should hire for the things you don't want to do, so that you can keep your fire lit. And it's difficult because, you know, you think that, you know, the books tell you that, you know, you're the boss, you're not supposed to X, Y, or Z, when in fact, I think it's quite the opposite, like you said. You know, find your spark and you'll light everyone else up as well. But it is difficult, because if you hire people for the stuff that you're not good at, how do you help them be good at that? Right. And so do you also help them with strategy through that?
Yeah. So it's all about finding out whether you are, because some people, they will be more naturally a manager. And yes, there's a lot of talk about what's a leader, what's a manager. But a lot of people, they just feel more confident in, you know, telling person A what to do and making sure person B does that. And the other people, they're more the big picture thinker. They know where they want to go and so on. So it's, I think the first step is to realize for yourself if you are happier in the trenches and telling people what to do and making sure they all pull their weight, then don't try to suddenly be that, right, guys, we're now going to become the next enter big fat corporation here. Don't try and do that. And if there is someone in the team that you can sense is really popular with the rest of the team and people look up to that person for direction, why not leverage that? Why not talk to them, get them involved, maybe give them a bit more of a highbrow senior position? If they have those energetic skills, in quotation marks, that you might not naturally possess, why not get the team involved already? And so what was your original question?
It's being able to understand your strengths, your weaknesses, you know, and hire for your weaknesses, because you're strong at what you're strong at. You don't need necessarily need that until you want to actually step into a different position in your company. But I love
hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
That I think a lot of business owners think that they have to be the visionary, when in fact, you just have to be good at what you're good at. You know, you are the owner of the company. There is nothing to prove to anybody, you know? So I really appreciate the fact that you said, if there's someone else on your team, pay them well, put them in the position to be the visionary, and like, let them be, put people on the right seat of the bus is what we call it. That's super important for a business to thrive. And for cultures to be ignited, and for people to, like you said, show up because they actually want to show up.
Completely. So if you have that high flying person in your team that is, you know, has that natural knack for inspiring people, if you then constantly try to be like vision up them, always go one higher in vision, they will probably get quite frustrated as well, because they deep down know they're potentially more, you know, inspiring in that field. So if they're constantly being told by someone, well, but I'm better, but I'm better. So this is just one of the, I guess, little hacks that you also need to start paying attention to as an owner and as a business owner. And as you say, it's about hiring for skill, but also trusting those people. So if you hire someone with a certain degree in, I don't know, IT, in marketing, whatever, then it's also a question of trusting them that they can actually do the job and not constantly trying to interfere and be like, have you done this? And what about, why don't we do it like this? And so on. So don't try and micromanage them either.
Yeah, I'd say for business owners, for any leader, ego checks is a constant thing. You have to check your ego to make sure that you're not just trying to one-up someone. I like that. We're hearing a lot about disengagement in the workplace. In your eyes, what is actually fueling that, and what can leaders do to shift that?
So that disengagement, I think it's really become a topic, like a main, I'd say it's been around for decades, but I think it's only become a topic now with the corona pandemic, because people were forced to work from home, and suddenly they didn't have to commute into an office anymore, and they didn't have to get on with I don't know, Lisa from finance, who they don't like. And they realize, actually, working from home, I have my life here, but I also get to work, which brings in money. So I think that kind of made people shift priorities a little bit. And now, especially with younger generations hitting the market and the workplace, they need more than just a, here's your job, just do what, do as you're told. And I think that is increasingly difficult for business owner to provide them, not necessarily the why, but to communicate that why and the purpose of their role. So I feel people just have seen, thanks to having to stay at home for 1 to 3 years, depending on what country you were in, to just stay at home. So they've seen that just being in the office all day, every day is not the answer. So now they just are a bit more critical of that old working scenario.
Definitely. I think that it's such a blessing what, you know, unfortunately COVID was terrible, but what a blessing it gave us to see what can be done, because a lot of industries, we just couldn't work from home. And then all of a sudden we were forced to and figure it out. And now I do see a lot of corporations going back as if they're hoping we forgot what it felt like to work from home. And, you know, a lot of people are not forgetting, you know, a lot of people, especially in the US, are taking a stance and saying, absolutely not, you know, we will not come back to the, there's no reason for us to come back to the office. And so there is disengagement there. And so it's forcing companies, in my opinion, to find other, you know, higher paid or different perks or incentives to get people back to work or to actually get them to work. But what are some other ways that business owners, leaders can help engage their people to bring them back without, you know, having to spend the money, because we all know what the economy looks like right now and blah, 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 blah.
Well, deep down, every person, so every member of staff just wants to be seen. They want to be valued and they want to be appreciated. So anything that you can do to make them feel those things, that's a winner. And there were, yes, a lot of people, and that's a discussion I have more often than I'd like to admit, is that's a discussion where business owners are always like, oh, I just don't have the money to give them pay rises. But the thing is, money is not the main motivator for people. So I think they've done a survey in 2023 where they asked job leavers, why did they leave their job? And only 16%, so 1/6, said it's because of the money. And that means 84% are motivated by something else. Right. So, yeah, what can you do? It's just things of showing a person their role in the bigger picture. So if you are going to be the next Google or the next whatever big company, show even down to the janitor, down to the receptionist that answers the telephone, make sure they know what their role is in the bigger picture. Yeah. It's also things like calling them out in meeting, like in a positive way. Right. So feedback's really, really important. And don't fall into this trap of telling in a meeting, just be like, oh, the team's done really great. Be specific. Mm-hmm. Call out individual members and say, you know what, Claudia did really well last week because she did X, Y, Z. So make it as specific as possible. Because even if you say, oh, Romy did amazing, without giving it any more context, that risks that the other team members will be like, oh, but what exactly is it she did? And so on. And also it's creating anything that is, so creating a sense of belonging. So can you do especially important for people working from home, because that is the only downside with working from home, is to keep this group energy and this we're a team alive. And how can you do that? Can you do a Friday afternoon social or something? Or can you do a shared playlist? One of the business owners that I spoke to recently said they have a shared Spotify playlist. And I just thought that's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's company names playlist. So it's all about thinking a bit differently and making sure you see every individual person. So don't just see them as one big team, but find out what motivates Bob. What does Steve like? What's going on in Lisa's world? And so on. So it's about not just looking at them as one big team, but looking at the individual as well and finding out what motivates them, because just talking to them, you'd be amazed what you can find out.
Yeah. Why do you think leaders avoid that piece of it, that piece of engagement? Is it, well, I'll let you answer before I interject my thoughts.
Do you mean avoiding like one-to-one conversations?
Yeah, I feel like some leaders avoid getting to know their people.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts around that?
I think it's a bit of a two-part answer, but I'm really looking forward to hearing your thoughts as well. So the first one is, you have to be like, in order to get to know someone, you always have to be a bit vulnerable yourself, and you might have to share something of yourself. And then there's always that like fine line, like, when is oversharing? What's not sharing enough? Because you don't want to come across like just a boss robot. But you also don't want to tell them about the fight you just had with your partner and, you know, the dog died or whatever it is. So that is always that fine line. It's like, how friendly are you with your staff? And the second thing, I think, is a lot more operational one, because once you start doing one-to-ones, the first ones will feel so awkward because you don't know what to say. Your staff member is worried they're going to get fired. So it's like, you know, there will be a lot of awkward laughing and like, oh, would you like another coffee and so on. But it's like any habit, if you keep doing them, and especially if you have a structure, so certain questions that you just ask your team every time that actually tell you something about them, they will get used to the process, you will get used to the process, and it will feel a lot smoother. But yeah, the first ones will feel awkward. It's just, there's no way of sugarcoating it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I agree with both of those assessments. I feel that, to add to that, I feel like, at least the leaders that I've encountered, there's a level of avoidance that I think they do because they feel like they have to fix people. And so if they know about people's issues, then they feel this pressure. And I had it too early on in my career of, you know, oh, so-and-so is not doing well today. Well, it's my job to make them feel better. When in fact, it's not your job to make them feel better. It's just your job to kind of show up for them and hold space and allow them to be that. And then when they walk away, you don't take it on. And so I see a lot of leaders avoid getting to know people as if it's like adding on to their weight of just who they have to be every day. And so I try to encourage them, like, you're just holding space for people. You don't have to fix it. They're going to fix it. It's like coaching, right? You're not fixing anything. You're just helping them extract the answers that are already within them. But it's always so interesting to me how leaders kind of avoid getting to know their team. Like, for me, I'm a people person. So I love people. I love to know more about you and all the things. And so it's always so interesting to me when I meet leaders who are not necessarily extroverts or people. And when I ask, it's just like, ugh, you know, like, do I have to? Can they just do the work and we just go home? And I'm like, no, we can't do that, you know? And that takes me into the next topic, which is one of my favorite topics because it's something that I had to overcome, which is having those difficult conversations. I think there are different reasons, but what are your thoughts around, one, why difficult conversations need to be had? And then two, why do we avoid them so much?
Okay. So why do we avoid them so much? Because again, it's that risk of being disliked, and you know, by if you tell a staff member off for, I don't know, being always late to meetings, for example, you risk them being really outraged because how dare you? And then they will go and tell five of their colleagues and so on, and suddenly you're the bad person in the office. So I think that is the scenario a lot of business owners have in their head. But the truth is, if someone is really always late for meetings and you just pointed out that that's then for them to take a look in the mirror and be like, well, actually, yeah, probably right. But why do they happen? Why do they have to happen, those conversations? Is because if you tolerate things like people coming late to meetings, or you know, their phone, they're always on their phone, or whatever bad behavior is they're doing, if you tolerate these things, the rest of the team will notice, and the rest of the team will be like, oh well, if he's okay doing that, then I don't need to be on time for meetings. So you might be avoiding a difficult conversation in the short term, but the long-term damage is actually so much worse. And I read an article recently where they said an awkward conversation is only awkward for the first 7 seconds, because then you've said it, then you've said what you wanted to say, and then it's not awkward anymore because it's off your chest. So it's a bit like a plaster. It's just do it.
Yeah. Let's walk through.
Is it a Band-Aid?
It's a band-aid. Let's walk through that. Let's pretend Jack is always late for meetings. So is your first step really assessing if it's a problem?
It depends. So that's why the first step for me when I work with my clients is always finding out what are their non-negotiables. So mm-hmm. if you are a boss that who really values punctuality, and I personally am, I'm very much like, you know, if the meeting starts at 2 o'clock, I'll be there at 5:52. And right. So for me, that is really important. There might be bosses out there that say, you know what, actually, I'm usually 10 minutes late as well. So for them, that might not be an issue. But if it is an issue for you as a boss, or if someone else in the team has commented on it, then I think it's definitely worth a conversation.
So I'm Jack, and I'm always late for meetings. How would you approach me and have this uncomfortable or difficult conversation?
Because we, in an ideal world, we would have a monthly one-to-one anyway. So it wouldn't mm-hmm. be, and that's another big argument for having those regular one-to-ones, because it already takes away or takes down the threshold a little bit, because mm-hmm. you know you're going to see... What was your name? Jack?
Jack.
I'll see you again anyway next Wednesday. Next Wednesday is our appointment. So mm-hmm. I know we'll talk about if there's anything that's bothering you, or if you have anything you would like to get off your chest. And then I would just say, you know, with the meetings, I have noticed recently you were late, or someone has mentioned it to me. Is there anything I can help you? Be on time, or I can help you support you to make sure that doesn't happen anymore, because that is really important to me, or it's better for the team.
Right. Like the framework you just used, if you can miss it so easily, right? But it's important to say, I've noticed, it's important to say like how you got the information. It's important yeah. to offer help. You know, all these things make that conversation less awkward, less difficult, because you're not accusing the person. You're not saying you're always late, you yes. know, and that changes the dynamic, because now Jack, right, is no longer on defense, right? I'm like, oh, yeah. actually, there is something that you can help me with. That yeah. meeting is at 10 when I drop my kid off at 9:45. And so it's always really difficult for me to get here at 10. If you can change it to 10:10, I would actually be more on time. And that changes everything, right?
Yeah. Because then if you're Jack, you feel heard. You feel like, mm-hmm. oh, actually, I matter enough for mm-hmm. the team to move the meeting by 10 minutes. So yes, absolutely. And yeah. great, great points to single out those things and how you should say it, and make sure you said, well, as you said, you have noticed, and make it specific, as specific as possible.
Yeah, I feel like people avoid it because they also don't know how to have it, because they're so angry at the moment that they think they have to have it right then and there. And I love the fact that you said, no, we're going to meet next Wednesday. By then I should be less charged, and we're just going to talk about it, right? Because you don't want to do it when you're charged, right? Because you're yeah. not thinking clearly. You know, so,
absolutely, yeah, yes.
That's so good. And it's really empathy, which takes me to our next, you know, topic of conversation, and where empathy lies with you in leadership and where it comes from. What are your thoughts and ideals of empathy in the workplace?
So the first and biggest thing on that topic is probably to realize that the people working for you are human and they are real people and they have real problems, mm-hmm. and work might not be in their top five of issues right now. So the first step for me is just to have that realization, to be like, they're not just one big group of team. They are individuals that all have their things going on. So that's the first. And then, yeah, to just sit down with them individually. If you feel someone's motivation's dropping off, or they were really, really good and really, they always brought ideas and were creative, and suddenly they're not quite there themselves, don't assume that they've just lost interest in the job. Just, take them aside and say, again, I have noticed, and is there anything I can do to help? And then just listen. And I have this really annoying habit of, when I say just listen, is this, because someone told me that's a silent fox, and that's what you want to do. Now I can't stop doing it. But yes, just ask the question and then listen. And usually what is not being said is just as important what is being said. So that's like, learning to listen is almost a skill on itself, in itself, but is, in my point of view, one of the biggest factors of empathy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love the fact that you brought up that somebody could possibly not have work in their top five, and how to manage that. Because when we go to work as leaders, we think this is the highest priority and we need to be first. And the reality is that you're not, right? It's not even for you. You're not, work is not even first for most of us, right?
Yeah.
But we have this idea that the employee should have that, which is a false, it's not okay. But when it's not in the top five, how long do you allow it to be number six? And how do you manage that?
Well, I guess it's a conversation that needs to be had about the minimum input that you require from that person. Mm-hmm. So you can say, yeah, I completely understand there's other things going on. And that's obviously only a few conversations in. So I wouldn't do that in the first conversation where you first point out that you notice that their engagement has dropped. But you are allowed to set some rules. I call them the boss rules, because you are the boss. We start our business because we want it to give us more life. So therefore, it can follow our rules. But you know, your rule can be, when my team comes in, I need them to do at least 4 hours of productive work every day. Or I need them to, if it's a marketing manager, I need them to publish or finalize the social media plan for next week. So you can set your minimum requirements for someone to fulfill their job.
Right. While they're in transition of whatever life transitions are happening.
Yeah, absolutely. You can be understanding and you can say, yeah, that's fine. And I guess it also comes back to communication. So if someone says, you know what, it's only at in my top, it's my sixth spot. But I can do this because I know that's my job, but I might need a week longer to do it. Or can I extend the deadline? Can I hand some of this off to Peter? And so on. So it comes back to that communication and almost meeting in the middle.
100%. 100%. I love that. So if you could sit down with your younger self, just entering leadership, what's one piece of advice that you would give her?
I'd say you don't always know best. So definitely when I first started, I was like, yep, I know best. Everybody just do as I say. But then luckily with the benefit of experience, you learn that actually someone else's point of view is just as valuable, and sometimes even more valuable, because that's how you learn. So it's this whole piece of, be more self-reflective. What are you trying to say, and are you really saying it in the best way possible? Breathe before you reply.
Yes. So how does a leader become more reflective?
I recommend something like at least weekly, look at what went well that week, what did not go well. Definitely after every team conversation or team interaction, be it in the bigger team or in your one-to-one conversations, sit down and ask yourself, okay, what went well? What am I going to do differently next time? Because that will come automatically after a while, but when you just get started with the self-reflection and looking in the mirror, just force yourself. So actually, I give my clients who I work with, I give them almost a worksheet to fill in after every meeting so they can just start noticing things about the conversations they're having as well. And as I said, it will come more naturally and it will almost become automatic eventually. But to begin with, just ask yourself at every opportunity, what would I do better next time? How can I improve?
Yeah. And I would only add one thing, which is ask for feedback too, right? I think we're so scared to know because there are blind spots, right? I've seen leaders have meetings and they thought it went great. And I'm like, you know, maybe we should ask the team. And asking your team for real feedback and getting real feedback, that's another place that, you know, that's gold for me, is just asking for feedback. And if they're open enough to tell you the truth, and then reflect on that as well, it could be painful at first, but eventually you learn that it's not personal. It's just the way to get better, you know? So I like your worksheet though. I think that's great.
And on that note, I don't know if you've made a different experience, because sometimes you will have, not everyone in a team is comfortable speaking up in front of a group, or is not naturally outgoing or super quick-minded. So I find if you really want true feedback, is give people the opportunity to either send in an email afterwards, so put something in writing, or even have an anonymous mailbox or letterbox where they can throw letters in or just feedback without giving their name away. Because a lot of people, and that comes back to that power imbalance between boss and employees, a lot of people, they're worried they're going to get fired if they speak their truth, and if they say, oh, actually I didn't like that you interrupted me in the meeting. So make sure you give some thought to how do you enable even the quieter members of your team to speak up.
For sure. And as a leader, if you're going to ask for feedback, you know, your ego is going to have to take a back seat, because it's going to be painful. I just want to put that disclaimer out there. Your feelings are going to be hurt. And it's not your team's fault. It's nobody's fault. It's almost like the initial break in something, right? It's going to hurt at first, but then it'll heal. And you'll be fine. You won't die, I promise.
Yeah.
But just understand, don't take it out on them, because that'll be the first reason why they never speak up again.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So awesome, Claudia. I really appreciate this. What would be your final thoughts to our audience?
Oh, it's probably this: you don't need fixing. There's nothing wrong with you. And it's all about... you just need a strategy. You just need a step-by-step. You need some clarity about where you're going, what you accept, what you don't accept, what your rules are. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. And everyone's got what it takes to be a great leader, because leadership is not just, it's not a personality trait. It's a skill that you can learn by including some good habits. And just keep doing the work, as you said, even if it feels awkward, get the feedback, but you absolutely have what it takes.
Amen. I love that. I think that's so true. It's not fixed. It's a growth thing, and you're always growing. Even the most seasoned leaders are always growing. So I think that's great advice. And obviously, I encourage everyone to grab the book. Where can they find the book?
It's on Amazon. So it's called Take Charge, The Boss Method for Entrepreneurs Who Never Plan to Be Leaders. Amazon, or through our website as well.
Awesome. And where can people find you online?
The best way to connect with me and to see what I have to say is probably on LinkedIn. So I'm just there as Claudia D. Thompson. And feel free to connect, follow, say hi. Let me know what you thought. Let me know if you thought anything was missing. So I'm always very open for feedback as well.
That's amazing. We'll definitely have all the links in the show notes, guys. Claudia, I want to thank you for your time. I know it's a little later in the UK right now, but I appreciate you showing up and being here. I think the conversation was very fruitful, as I, you know, expected it to be, and I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me, and a really, really good conversation.
Definitely. All right, guys. Well, that concludes our episode of Leadership from the Heart. If you please go follow Claudia first, but if you like the episode, like and subscribe and share it with anyone who you think it could be helpful for. And we'll see you next time on another episode of Leadership from the Heart. Thank you.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.